We'll call a bluff today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. The question today is, poet Dick Stahl bluffing? We'll ask him. Then we'll ask Garrison Keillor for the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Dick Stahl. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What is all this bluffing stuff?
Well,
I mean, really.
What is it all about?
Yeah.
Well, it's something that started after my wife and I read some magazines, Big River Magazine, and in one of the early ones, I think it was 2003, they had a map of all the bluffs on the upper Mississippi River from Minneapolis down to Iowa, and my wife and I just thought it would be a good adventure to start climbing. And so we did, and the result, many years later, is this book that is entitled Bluffing.
Climbing?
Climbing.
I mean, isn't that doing it the hard way?
Yes. And I think one of the early editions of Big River, Reggie McLeod, the editor, pointed out, I think it was 24 bluffs that were accessible to the public. There are more that maybe keep out, but...
But not necessarily safe, right?
No, not. He didn't say safe.
No.
He said they're publicly accessible, which means that some of them you can drive up easily with a car, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And some you have to walk, and, you know, maybe it's a mile or so, but it's not too steep. It's not too bad. And follow the trail. Here it is. But some you have to actually climb, and sometimes up wooden steps or sometimes up a very steep incline. So you're never sure what to expect. You're never sure, is this an easy one or a hard one? There is one in Minnesota that at the very beginning, John A. Latch State Park, big sign says, difficult. Please believe that sign.
Yeah.
It is difficult because you're going up a wood stairs, and sometimes you have a railing, sometimes there's no railing, sometimes you're balancing yourself like on a tightrope, and so it's a long way to the top.
Well, I'm glad you explored this instead of me.
So it's the bluffs that are bluffing.
The
right?
Bluffs that are bluffing, yeah.
And the poet never bluffs.
I'm competing. I am. I am trying to bluff too. I think.
Well, no. I thought, you know, I mean, Whitman, you're one of your idols.
Yeah.
Says absolutely without ornament. That's poetry, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's no bluffing in poetry.
No
it's
bluffing.
The truth.
No bluffing in poetry.
Well, now that's the thing, though. You did all this, and you turned it into a book.
Mm-hmm.
Writers do that, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And poets are a special kind of writer, so it calls for a special kind of book. You've combined a couple of elements in this, not only the poetry, but a visual aspect as well.
Yes. Each poem has a photograph. In most of the poems, you can see the river, and I think that's important. We tried to do that with every one of them, except there was one I didn't get the river. But
you took all the pictures.
Yes,
yourself?
I took all. Well, no, there are two. I think there's one exception where my wife and I are sitting down at a bench on King's Bluff, and someone else took our picture.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, you know, as long as you acknowledge that, you're not cheating.
It's a copyright violation.
But the poems. The
yes.
poems that these evoked. Can you give us a sample?
Sure. The first one I'd like to read is when we went to Alma, Wisconsin, and Buena Vista Park. It's a fairly easy one to climb. There isn't a lot of walking to it, but it's when you get there, it's kind of wild. You can kind of see the rocks there, and you can see the river, the trees, and so on. So it's you got to be kind of nimble here. So the name of the poem is "Why the Wiggle Waggle Wears So Well."
Mm-hmm.
I enter Wiggle Waggle Slough here in Alma to learn a water dance from the best teacher ever, the Mississippi River. From the bluff, I catch the backwater rhythm scripted along this ancient maze to spawn marine life and highly accented motion. The upper wiggle waggles in the head and shoulders, the chest and torso. I turn and twist, shimmy and snake, shaking off any sloth, while the lower wiggle waggles all legs, squats and fancy pirouettes, footwork that traces sturgeon fins and frantic mud puppy squirms. Dancing back to my car, I swing my life spirit into this mystery of connections. The young lovers who pass me hand in hand toward the overlook shake their heads. They think I'm bluffing.
Aha! Now we know where the title comes from. You also write your poems in shapes in this.
Yes, in shapes. Yes, I do sometimes. I don't know. I try to have different lines. I mean, I try to have each stanza have different lines.
Well, I saw one snaking down the page.
That was the table of contents.
That's
I
the
think.
Table of contents.
Oh, table.
That's, does,
yeah.
The table does snake.
Yes, the table is a curve.
Oh,
kind of
yes,
an S curve, maybe
okay.
A reverse S curve, yes. Because the river, you go to the top of the bluffs and you never know what to expect. Is the river going to be north and south here? Is it going to be an S curve? You know, what? You don't know that. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the surprise that awaits me up there is that, you know, you can write about this bluff and the water, but you never know what you're going to expect. You never know what the climb is. You never know about the water and so on. But that makes it interesting. And then on the cover of the book, have the wraparound bluff. And this was taken from Trempealeau. One morning, my wife and I were driving to Perot State Park, and all of a sudden, I saw this, and I thought, that's it. We got to get out of the car, like, now. And so I got out of the car, crossed the railroad track, and that's the picture, because the sun was just right. Everything was just right. We could get a...
Well, you know, this is a beautiful book. In addition to being premier Dick Stahl poetry, it's lovely to look at.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we try to make it... It's a hybrid. I'd like to think of it as more as a hybrid, maybe not so much as a poetry book, but there's just, I think it has more to offer. We got the pictures.
I've read it, and I think it's a hybrid in more ways than that. It's a hybrid in that while you're on the bluffs and you're ostensibly writing about the bluffs, it's really the river that's always there, right? And,
right.
And in fact, you see a different river from the bluff tops than you
yes.
see from down on the river in a boat.
That's right.
Yeah, you've been chronicling the river for quite a while.
Long time now. Mm-hmm. Just about every book I think I've ever done has had something to do with the river.
One question that it's sort of fun to ask poets because I think the answers all differ. What's the relationship between the experience that the poet has of the bluff or the river and the poem?
Well,
is the poem a pale imitation of the thing, or is it in some ways better than, or does it?
Or
is,
how
is
about
the...
commensurate with?
Well, it isn't commensurate with
no,
taking
not,
a drink of
no,
water.
It's not commensurate.
Is different
yeah.
from reading
yeah.
a poem about taking a yeah. drink of water.
Yeah, I think I just and again, my wife accompanied me on this journey. I tried to get to the bluff and to see something different about it. What's the image that kind of sticks in my mind? What's the river doing here? Is it racing? Is it a wide stretch? And do I see the water lines there? Is it very quiet? In some cases, not. I think I try to find what is the image that sticks in my mind from this particular vantage
point. So would you say the poem tries to put the experience in focus?
Yes. Yes, I think the poem tries to put my experience in focus. Sometimes you're alone. Sometimes when you go to Granddad's Bluff in La Crosse, there's a lot of people, a lot of, you know, it's a drive up. You only walk a few feet, and the place is jammed sometimes on weekends. But other places, you're kind of by yourself. No protection, no railing, no nothing. And so, you know, there's a little bit of being scared here, maybe a little bit, you know. You don't want to take a wrong step or step too far. And so I think what I try to write is what I see. It's not always what I look at that matters, but what do I see? What do I see at from this height? So we're talking maybe 500, 600 feet up. What do I see of the Mississippi? So I'm always looking down at the trickery, maybe, of the Mississippi. I think,
you know, of late you've been writing what you might call occasional poetry,
mm-hmm.
occasions that elicit a poem from you. And this is a little different. These are occasions, but they're very personal. They have nothing to do with anybody else until they experience them in your poetry. So do you see this as a departure of your recent work?
Oh, somewhat, I guess. It's still the Mississippi, and my fascination is still with that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I can't get away from that.
That is the broad thread that runs through all your work.
That's the silver thread that runs through all of it, yes.
Give us another bluff.
Okay. Yeah. This is another bluff.
I mean, there's a book full of them there.
Oh, I got a lot of them here. This one is in Dubuque, and I'm approaching the Julian Dubuque Monument, where Julian Dubuque is interred or buried. And so it's very, you know, you're very high up. The Mississippi is right in front of you there. And my wife and I were there, and I took pictures. But this is kind of what I felt as I was there. So the poem is called Storming the Tower. I'm storming the tower with my army of one sharp, hard lead pencil. I hope that's enough force to sketch this lookout and scare away the hundreds gathering here who patrol in plain clothes to pay homage to this city's founder. Its round command of high ground rewards this tall Galena limestone turret with enough open eyes to see in all directions. It's so strategic, I must take it if I'm to control traffic on the Mississippi River. The closer I get, the fatter my offensive plans, the shorter the day, and the more I feel this campaign may stall. The guardians shoot picture after picture and reload. The smell of lead permeates the whole area as I recall how Julian Dubuque led the brilliant operation called Mines of Spain. On the sidewalk now, I'm closing in with my stubby lead pencil to take this tower by complete surprise.
Is stall spelled STAHL there?
That's what I wondered.
I thought
yeah.
you were going to ask that question.
You're bluffing, Dick.
I'm bluffing. It's STALL.
Oh, you passed up a good one there.
I thought it's TALL.
Yeah. No. Well, the reader can't hear that difference.
Yeah, we both lit up on that.
I thought someone would catch that, maybe.
From
yes.
our campaign stall.
How can we get a copy of the book?
The copy of the book is at the following places here. Let's see. River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque. I'm coming down river now. National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque. Buffalo Bill Museum in LeClaire. Augustana College Bookstore in Rock Island. And Big River Bookstore online. And this is Reggie McLeod. And it's at 1-800-303-8201.
Okay.
More may come at but not at this time. That's what I have at this time. So.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a book I think that should draw some interest.
Well, I hope so.
Are you I've talked to you a little bit about a launch party. Have you given any more thought to that? It seems to be the in thing these
yeah.
days.
Well, perhaps at a later date. Perhaps at a later date.
Okay. Well, it's whenever you do, let us know.
Okay.
Because they usually serve things at these.
Yes, they do.
Oh, well, then we'll go.
Well, this should be a climbing party, right?
Not a climbing party. You got to climb.
No, you do any climbing. I will wait at the door. That's for sure. But this does this spur you on to do more things, to put more experiences into poetry?
Yes, yes.
Any ideas?
Well, there are more bluffs. Bluffs become, I don't know, lookouts now. Some of the articles refer to high, lofty lookouts. And so we might pursue some of those. But I chose these first, I think, because these were the ones that seemed to be bluffs. These were a little higher and more majestic, I think, anyway. But I can see some, I don't know, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, you're currently working on Central High School.
Central
can you
High
tell
School,
us briefly
yes.
about that?
Central High School has a construction project, and they are constructing a new swimming, a pool, and a place for theater, auditorium. And so I've taken many pictures, and I've written poems, and it's kind of the same thing, only a little bit different. There, I'm trying to write about construction and just what I see. Again, I'm not a civil engineer or anything like that, but but just to see what I think they're doing. I have a lot of poems about the outside. I'm trying to get some poems inside. And so tomorrow, for example, I have to wear my hard hat, and I have to go to the site and talk to the engineer. Mm-hmm. So I have to see what I'm trying to write about, you know.
If your bluffing book is any indication, your constructing book should be equally appealing.
Equally, it's a little different angle, but it's...
Well, a couple of years ago, you did the same thing for Augie when they were redoing their... the old main and the new student center and
football field. Yeah, we did
all of that. A whole series of poems.
Yes.
Well, then you are our chronicler, Dick.
So I'm a chronicler of bluffs.
Bluffs. Okay. So bluffing by
maybe it's all a bluff. The whole thing is.
I hope it doesn't stall.
I hope it doesn't.
Oh dear! It's about time for us to leave.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Dick Stahl.
Oh, you're welcome.
His new book, Bluffing, is available. A wonderful combination of beautiful pictures and poems by Dick Stahl. Right now, we have. I think there'll be a poem too as Garrison Keillor brings us the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Now we dip into the book bag, and you got his hand in already, Roald.
Well, I have a book to recommend from one of the Quad Cities' preeminent readers. He's never reading a book whenever I bump into him without saying this is the best book I've ever read. So, but he's generally right. He picks good books. He's a retired dentist, but he has been a reader his whole life. His name is Ralph Horton.
Oh, I know Ralph, yeah.
Yeah, well, the book he recommends this time, I bumped into him at Cool Beans, is The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Wohlleben, Wohlleben. And it's simply a book about things you never knew much about trees. It turns out they're like the Ents in Lord of the Rings, far wiser than you think they are.
You know, Roald, you have touched on a subject that has been growing in me. I took biology, but I ignored botany completely. But for most of my life, especially in these last few years, I've been absolutely blown away by trees. Just looking at them, considering them, watching them, and thinking, these things know something.
Well, and it turns out know is a serious thing. I mean, trees do know things. They don't just sit there and grow.
Mm-hmm.
I first came across in the when we were down in Peru, we went out into the jungle, Margaret and I and our daughter, and we discovered the walking trees. These are trees who have about 8 or 9 stems, like cypress knees in the swamp. And they walk. When a big tree falls down, giving them more light over here, over the next 10 years or so, these trees will send out new roots. Old ones pull up, new roots. And over the period of 10 years, they'll walk 50 feet to get more light. I mean, they literally know how to walk, right? Yeah. Or something's telling them. But this book is really fascinating. I did not know that, the roots are the life of the tree. For him, what's going on underneath the surface, the roots know. And they send up the right nutrients. They send up the right amount of moisture. They are humming, he says, with electrical impulses. And they learn from experience and not to repeat things again. And he says one researcher in Germany even found what he calls brain-like structures on trees' root tips. Trees can count. They know the number of days and the amount of the number of days at above 50 degrees when they can begin to say to the buds, it's okay to go out. Yeah. And they, in the fall, they know enough to, it's going to get cold. I got to conserve my energy. So they take the green chlorophyll that they've made that are in the leaves and that give them the green color, and they send them down to the roots so that it gives us a beautiful fall display. Underneath, the chlorophyll is stored up then, and next spring they can begin to use it again. Trees, apparently, many varieties of trees can send out messages. If insects begin to attack them, they can send out pheromones so that other trees can start to prepare themselves against the onslaught. Help, I'm being attacked. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they're talking to each other, which I guess in a way they are.
You know, I saw something once that absolutely transfixed me. My wife was in the hospital, and I was staring out the window. There's a grove of trees across the way, and one tree in the very middle was twirling around. The crown was going as if there'd been a little cyclonic thing right over it, and it was moving around. And I thought, well, that's odd. The other trees aren't moving at all. Just that one tree. I looked away and mentioned to Bernadette, you know, this is really odd. And I looked back, the tree was still and the other trees around it were twirling. And I thought, now, wait a minute. Surely this is just some kind of atmospheric thing, but something's going on there. I don't understand. And then you find out, just read, that plants communicate. They live a very interesting life that we know nothing about.
And ditto all of life. What we are understanding now about what other species than humans know is, which is sometimes more than we can find out.
What is the name of this book and the author again?
The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Wohlleben, Wohlleben.
Okay, and I think we can recommend that without reservation. But for right now, I recommend that we head to the exit because our time is about gone. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back again next week with another interview and more conversation about books on Scribble.